too many Tic Tacs in the town.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 3:38 starting time. Please welcome from Toronto, Ontario, Canada, Matthew Wiley. Play away, please.
Golflandia 159. That's Siamese Dream, Smashing Pumpkins, Rocket. What a great album. If you're not a child of the 90s, that rivaled Nirvana for one of my favorite albums of all time. They weren't as good live, Smashing Pumpkins. And Billy Corgan was kind of a weirdo. But, who wasn't? But that album absolutely killed it. Start to finish. So good. And I think I started this podcast, 159 episodes ago with Smashing Pumpkins. So let's go back to our roots. Let's try to get some luck back with going back to original music. By the way, I'm very fidgety. I've noticed that. I've noticed that in my youngest daughter. And so I noticed that in me. And we're both... I mean, she's diagnosed attention deficit disorder, so naturally, I guarantee I am. Fidgety. Cannot focus. Cannot focus at all on anything. 159 podcast, that's what this is. I was going to put in the beginning, because someone thought I should, because I tweeted a video on the weekend, or the week, about PGA Tour Live. And if you've ever watched PGA Tour Live on your phone, they don't bring their A-plus broadcasting crew. Like, I love Dottie Pepper, and I love Nick Faldo, and I love that crew. The Immelman boys. Nobolo. But PGA Tour Live people, and they're trying their best, but they don't see... It's like they don't see world-class golf talent or shots as much as the other crew does. So, you know, even decent shots for a pro, they go nuclear. And there was this one pitch from, or chip at least, from Justin Thomas, and the announcer, because I wasn't paying attention, I was listening to an audiobook because I can't read good. And it was just him going, "Wow! Wow!" Just follow my, watch my Twitter account. It like blew my brain apart. And it was, I mean, it was a decent chip. I mean, it rolled to 8 feet. Justin Thomas has done way better. But someone said I should put that in the opener. Which it may, for context. So there you go. Just watching TNT a minute ago, by the way. Is that desk? Is that desk on TNT for NBA basketball? Is that 100 feet wide? I know those guys are gigantic, and I know it's COVID, but that desk, and I'm sure I'm not the first person to comment on it, that desk is like an SNL sketch. It should be. It should just be getting bigger and bigger and bigger every week. They are 40 feet spaced from each other. It's funny. All right, Golflandia 159. We've got the 159. We've got the BMW Championship this week. Last week was the Northern Trust, which Dustin Johnson absolutely... I just looked over my right shoulder because I believe the ghost was right behind me just now. Did you hear that noise? I hope the podcast picked it up. Something just crashed to the right of me, and I turned. Edwin the ghost, the person who was killed in this office 150 years ago, continues to haunt me at night, and now I'm spooked. Edwin, chill out, man. Just relax. Let me finish this podcast. I'm in here alone right now. If you're here, make a noise. I dare you. Anyway, if that made a noise, this podcast was over with. But Dustin Johnson was minus 30 on this golf course last week. And, I mean, it wouldn't matter what course it was. You could have had a U.S. Open setup. It didn't matter. He was going to destroy it. Yeah, there are a lot of guys under par, but minus 30 is just, I mean, it was just obscene. You cannot golf better than that. You can't. I mean, what are the best rounds of all time on the PGA Tour over 4 days? Minus 31, 33, but that was at the Bob Hope Classic 100 years ago? I mean, that was just, that's the DJ you want. That is the, there is no better number one world golfer than Dustin Johnson, because he is so, he doesn't get overwhelmed by the moment. He doesn't ride bad holes into the next hole. He doesn't get dramatic in his interviews. He's just the man. And that playoff hole years ago, or a couple years ago, when he was taking on Jordan Spieth, it wasn't the Northern Trust. I forget what it was. But on hole 18, when they did the playoff hole, and Dustin Johnson hit one 330 over the water, just to absolutely curb stomp Jordan Spieth. That's the guy you want. There's not more liked guys on tour than Dustin Johnson, by the way, from what I hear. So it was great. And he could go back to back this week. Yeah. And I know that because I am the Twitterati. Someone on the weekend called me the Twitterati, and they're coming for me. And I better listen up. True story. I was involved. It's just been crazy the last 2 weeks in DFS golf. Mostly observed, but this one I got called the Twitterati. So there you go. And then I'm in a 7-day thread with about some argument I just happened to comment on early, and it's been going strong for 7 days, it seems. But in the middle of that thread, Justin Bates got involved, who's a good golfer, and he actually gave me some swing tips out of it. Him and the West Texas Golf Pro. If you don't follow the West Texas Golf Pro on Twitter, West Texas Driving Range Pro, JJ Colleen, TCU. He's a very good content creator, and he has some really funny stuff, and he knows his swing. But both of those guys said I hump the ball. And they're right. And JJ, or West Texas Driving Range Pros, one of his best lines was, "If your club face sucks, you suck," which cannot be more true. It all comes down to where your club face is at impact. And most often, my club face, I'm worried about 90 million other things. Do I look like Ernie Els? Yeah, great. I mastered that part. Now, where's your club face, dum-dum? Club face sucks, you suck. Could not be more right. DraftKings. I'm going to read this cold. Uh-oh, it's different. Oh, God. Hey, it's host name. Sorry. Hey, it's Matt Wiley. Telling you there's a bracket host name in red, so I got to put my host name. But I just read it as host name because I'm a moron. So, hey, it's Matt Wiley telling you there are 100 million reasons you should listen up to me. DraftKings, the The leader in one-day fantasy sports is celebrating the return of sports by giving away up to $100 million in prizes to all of their customers, including one lucky winner who will take home a $1 million cash prize. To claim your share of up to $100 million in instant giveaways, all you have to do is this. Download the app, again, sign in using promo code Golflandia, then enter DraftKings Free Football Survivor Pool. That's it. Up to $100 million in instant giveaways. And put yourself in the running to win $1 million cash prize. While the top prize is reserved for one lucky winner, everyone who signs up and enters DraftKings Free Football Survivor Pool will receive an instant bonus prize of at least $5 in value upon entering. While you're in the app, don't forget to check out all of our other great daily fantasy contests like basketball and golf. Stupidly, I got back into NHL, which is a great fantasy play. But then I started playing elite, you know, VIP Zen Master NHL DFS guys head-to-head. That's a mistake because they always luck-box their way to wins. Basketball was a joke. I'm not doing that again. But download the DraftKings app now and use promo code GOLFLANDIA to claim your... The Vancouver Canucks first line is an absolute crime. It was absurd. It killed me. I almost had these guys on the ropes. Idiots. Download the DraftKings app now and use promo code GOLFLANDIA to claim your share of $100 million in instant giveaways and put yourself in the running for the $100 million... So the $1 million cash prize. That's promo code GOLFLANDIA to get your share of $100 million in prizes only at DraftKings. Now, Slappy McJokester, the guy I created, the account, the persona, the brand I created on Twitter, which now claps back at me. Shameful. I said last week this TPC Boston was going to be a tougher test for golfers than Wyndham. Well, then Dustin Johnson shoots minus 30. Fine. The reality, Slappy McJokester, yes. It was much tougher test for the golfers I picked, Jason Day / Tony Finau. So there you go. I was accurate, but also inaccurate, if that makes sense. It all balances out. So it was a tough course for my golfers. No, I mean you need routing, you need dog legs, you need rough, you need narrow fairways, you need really firm fast greens. Otherwise, I mean, I don't care what it was last week. Dustin Johnson was going to go 10, 15, 20 under. 30 under is just obscene. It's obscene. I love it though. There is no one I like to see better. There's no one that prints more money. There's no one I'm more confident, you know, grabbing a win when he's in that zone than Dustin Johnson. Should be world number one now. So good. So good. At least it wasn't as bad of a take as the guy. Let me get his name. Should I out him? Yeah, let's out him. Why not? Because I said that Ricky Fowler's top three putters in the world. I probably should have said top five. Currently a top three putter in the world. And how I do that is who would you take in the moment? In the moment, not Denny McCarthy, not Arjun Atwal, even though he's a great putter. In the moment, who would you take over Ricky Fowler for your 10-foot putt if your life depended on it? And he gave me a list of guys who are not alive. So he said Arnold Palmer he would take over Fowler right now to make a 10-foot putt if his life depended on it. No, Mark C. on Twitter. I won't out your last name. I think you're wearing a... Oh, never mind. I thought you were wearing a St. Louis Cardinals jersey. You're not. My eyes deceived me. But who would you take over Ricky? Phil? Jason Day? Tiger? Ricky's putting stroke is... I mean, give Ricky all the hell you want. But I love Ricky's game. That hasn't worked out for me, but I love Ricky's game. Kevin Kelly. I think the great golf Twitter minds, me, he said me, how can the TV experience be fixed? This is a great question because it leads into me reading this Audible book or listening to this Audible book and everything tying together. The TV experience, how can it be fixed? It's been brutal, has been for years. It needs to be fixed. Okay, so I'm reading this book, and I will get to Ryan here. I didn't get to our DraftKings winner because I don't think his phone or his computer did not work. We waited for about a little bit. We'll see if we can get to him after this recording. I don't know if we can. But it was someone McSomeone. It was Jason McAlexander. I will never remember that. But it was Jason McAlexander because I thought it was a joke because Jason Alexander from Seinfeld. So I thought it meant he was just doing Jason McAlexander. But that's who won. Great name. But anyway, so in terms of the TV deal with golf, I'm reading a book called Reframing Healthcare. You don't need to read it. I'm reading it because of the business I'm in and because, you know, a large segment of my business is in healthcare. But basically, the principle of the book is, and I've said this for a long time from a marketing perspective, and it really captures this well in this book. Many times when you're faced with a challenge as a brand, you've got to really reshape how you look at your customer. The problem isn't how you're speaking to them, is that you focused on the wrong problem set. You've got to really reshape the problem, which takes a tremendous amount of unwinding and thinking when looking at challenging or discovering new ways to help your brand. And that is a huge, significant problem in healthcare, not for this podcast, but I wish I could do one to talk about it. And I'll get to the context of this with TV and golf. But basically, the healthcare's problem is that there's complete consumer dissatisfaction in healthcare. No one is no consumer, even though they don't generally pay for it out of their own pocket, and even though most times they are cured of the problem that they go in for to a hospital or a care provider, the satisfaction rate is abysmal. And the problem is that healthcare never looked at their brand and their delivery from a consumer perspective. Everything else in the marketplace is successful. Amazon, Apple, Microsoft. Their focus is always on consumerism. How does the consumer feel about my brand, and how do I acknowledge and how do I deliver on what they want from me? The label, the product, the sentiment, the emotion with my product, with my label and product and brand. That's never been the case in healthcare. It's always been a supply side. People are here. We're solving their problems. That should be enough for them. It's almost like you should feel just satisfied that you've been worked on by world-class physicians or care providers. The same problem with demand side happened with Kodak, which is a great case study in American brand history, because there's a lot of brands that I would love to help or talk about rehabilitating. And maybe I should do a whole podcast on it. I've talked about Toys R Us before, but there's certain brands in American history, no matter what happens to them from an operational perspective, their brand equity will carry value forever. Kodak to me is one of them. But it went off the rails. And this book talks about why Kodak went off the rails. I'd always had the argument incorrect, because when the conversion from film, 35 millimeter cameras, to digital took place, I believed that was Kodak's issue. It wasn't. They were very heavily focused in patenting, creating, and marketing and developing the digital camera, reducing workforce on the film side, and then really investing in the digital camera. This will tie into golf here in a second. Just bear with me. The problem was they were focused too much on the demand side of the equation for the consumer. You should want digital cameras because that is how people take photos now. So the camera side that we've invested in and patented, and we're Kodak, which is an iconic American label, symbol, color, logo, everything, still is. I had to take a drink. That's all you should need. And they thought of it from the demand side. The problem was, what is it that people want from digital photos? Is it just the storage of a digital photo, device agnostic? Is that what it was? Or was it real-time content creation, storytelling, and basically making a scrapbook of your life instantly, and the sharing of that content with the world? That was the distinguishing factor. You essentially were becoming your own film producer for your life through content, through your own content, and sharing that through social mediums, through friend networks, through text. And you couldn't do that on devices that Kodak was creating. And that's the genius of what Apple et al., especially Apple, thought about, is that they created a device that essentially became your own movie studio for your life. It wasn't about just capturing content. It was then what you did with that content afterwards, and also the timeliness of being able to take content with a device in your hand that was serving other purposes. And that's where Kodak went wrong. They didn't see the supply side. They didn't see the demand side from the customer. What was it? What was the sentiment with the customer? What did they really want? And I've said that in examples with other products. I've beat this to death before, but with Anheuser-Busch and beer. What industry are they in? And so I'm not going to give away the farm in terms of how I would approach the solution from the PGA side of things with television, but the look at the what is the problem, to answer Kevin's question that was asked about 30 minutes ago before I long-winded this answer, was what is the consumer actually trying to get out of television when they watch golf? That is the question they need to answer. Do I have an answer for it? Yes. Am I tired of giving away this shit for free? Yes. Do they want to talk to me about it? DMs are open. But that's it. What is the consumer in 2020 trying to get out of the content, the vision in my eyeballs from television? What is it? That's it. And most of the stuff, and part of the going back to the book I'm reading about reframing healthcare, talks about most customers, most people want everything they buy or consume or their situations, they want to find meaning and purpose in it. And in many brands that you buy, there is a comfort and meaning and purpose and history and emotion attached to it. So that if you are in the middle of nowhere and you find a store and you see a Starbucks, that brand, that label, you don't have to even know what's in the cup, but that image and that cup and that color scheme and that logo gives you comfort. And so what is the answer to that in terms of why are golf fans dissatisfied with content, with the content they're getting? What is it? Someone said it well, by the way. I don't know what's at Barstool or somewhere, but the future of content, it's personality driven, not network driven, not giant production value driven, personality driven. You don't need to spend $1 million on production to get people what they want in terms of personality and real-time content. Much like Kodak missed with their devices. They missed the demand side. What is the customer actually want? And the other part was, I don't know if this is connected to this question or not, but there's the 10-80-10 rule in life. And this connects to meaning and purpose in terms of what products I consume or how I solve problems, etc. In a desperate or dire or you know critical situation, there are 10% of the people will panic. 80% of the people will be in a homeostatic state and just accept what's coming to them. This is a let's say panicked, you're stranded on an island all of a sudden. Sort of situation. 10% will panic. 80% will accept their fate, and 10% will find new meaning and purpose in it. And then those people are most capable and adaptable to change and survival. Watch that show a lot. I think it's called Alive or Alone on Netflix. It's about survival by yourself for as long as you can handle it in the middle of nowhere. The people that survive don't have the best hunting instincts, shelter building instincts. That lasts for a short period of time. The people that last the longest are the people that create new meaning for their situation. It's all about that meaning in terms of what it is that this product, this relationship, this situation, and how do I relate to it, does for me. That's how I survive it. That's how I connect with it. I don't know if those two things are connected, but I find them both very interesting in terms of human psychology. And then thinking about how I would, if I was the PGA Tour Network, why are people pissed off about my television broadcast? What would I do to think about what it is the consumer wants? What is the meaning for it for them? Is it about watching golfers? Is it that simplistic? Is it 1983? Are we the only three channels on TV? Is this all they get? Is this overwhelming, fascinating, extraterrestrial content that people just blow their mind about? No. No, damn it. Another part is that, and Rory mentioned this, is that no fans are there, so golfers' behavior is really changing. For him, he needs, you can tell, I said this a few podcasts ago, that Rory just seems disengaged. He doesn't have that bounce or energy. I don't want to say he doesn't care because he's a world-class elite golfer, but from a comparative level to other players, it just seems like he's, whatever. Some of these golfers need that edge of the fans, either chirping them or just yelling or that energy. They ride it. And he said, I'm going to be honest. I miss it. I mean, it's affecting content too. It's totally different. So to answer your question, Kevin, to get this roundabout way, and I could talk about this stuff forever, and I have. But that is the answer to the question. And the more I would sit down and think about it and sketch it out, it's a supply side issue. It's not a supply side issue. It's a demand side issue. That's the solution. All right. Whatever. Let's talk to Ryan. Cash take you on a natural joint.
Queen, get the money. Tiger Woods, y'all.
Hey, Ryan.
Matthew, good evening.
How'd you do last week?
I did well, not well enough. It's a very frustrating Sunday afternoon, but it's fun to have a good team once in a while.
What hurt you in the end?
Quite a bit. Berger finishing solo third was probably the worst part, but ultimately I just had my team didn't play well. I had Louis, who was plus four after 15. I had Cameron Davis, who shot two over, and I had Scottie Scheffler, who didn't break par. So On a course where guys are shooting 59 and 60, that is not going to cut it on a Sunday.
So now we go to a Tree Lines Parkland course, Ryan.
We just left the Tree Lines Parkland course.
Yeah, but this one's different. This is more tree-lined and more parklands.
I agree. More, yeah, more Midwest, right?
More northern trees. More cool, warmish fall weather. Suburban Chicago. Olympia Fields. Formerly two U.S. Opens, I think a PGA Championship, USAM. Classic, old, historic, member-driven course. Are you a member?
I am not. Are people going to use amateur events as course comps here?
I hope not.
What are we doing?
I hope not.
Yeah.
It's this is from the Green Square Golf dot golf. Excuse me. No, it's at Green Square Golf. Course form, history, every tour, every player. Oh, by the way, every tour, every player. PGA champions. Newest member, Phil Mickelson.
Yeah, we got a nice early sweat going. smooth 10 under today for him with a 6 on a par 5. So,
isn't it a little, at least for me, because he was born in the 70s, as was I. It's a little depressing to see him on the Champions Tour.
Sure.
Because you know that's right in my wheelhouse now.
Yeah, I mean, he's basically the oldest of the guys, you know, I grew up watching, so yeah, it's all starting. Hell, Tiger's going to be on the senior tour in 5 years. Like, come on.
But do you think there's permanence to this, or he's just getting his, you know, getting in the win mode?
Both. For this, yeah, this particular event, I think he's definitely using it as a tune-up. You know, he said he didn't want to have a couple of weeks off before trying to play a major. But no, Phil, look, he's a showman. He can go out there and be the man, right? He's now the guy to beat. He's number one on that tour already, and he just started. So he lives for that.
10 under today. You know, Bernhard Langer is very competitive. I said this morning that he might serve him some tea just to make sure that Bernhard maintains his status as the greatest Champions Tour player ever. But Phil, I mean, you're just not going to beat him at 50 years old on these courses that are more wide open.
And short.
I mean,
he drives at 320 and he's the best wedge player on the planet. Yeah. Like, what do you think?
And perhaps putter.
He had 4 eagle putts today. Like, it's just not a fair fight.
You know, I expected more, as I said to someone else, because everyone's like, well, Phil's going to win every tournament. And I thought that about like Vijay Singh, especially Ernie Els. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you look at Ernie Els' swing, I mean, it's just a work of art, right? But he still can't compete with Scott Parel, who never won the PGA Tour, I don't think. But those guys just like Jerry Kelly, Scott Parel, Bernhard Langer, Scott McCarron. They just own that. Even Fred Couples can't compete. They just own that tour. It's bananas. I don't know. What's the secret?
It's the iron play. Like, yeah, I mean, those guys, like, they are excellent iron players, excellent wedge players, because you don't need to hit it far on the Champions Tour because nobody hits it far.
Tom Lehman.
Except Phil gets out there. Yeah. But no, I mean, it's actually quite a leaderboard after one day if, like, you look at it. And I think some of these guys are pretty pumped to have him out there because, you know, I mean, you see Vijay up there, Ernie. I mean, Mike Weir is up there, KJ Choi. Like, these are all guys who played against Mickelson for 25 years.
I hate it because it's almost like a chapter's closed. Phil has now died and gone to heaven. And we have to watch him from the beyond. It's like it's over. It's like life is over.
I think he has one more run in him, you know, at a major. It could be Augusta. It could be a U.S. Open. But I don't think he's quite done yet.
It's so different than the Champions Tour, though.
Yeah.
All right. Back to BMW Championship. Suburban Chicago, Illinois, USA. 1915 Willie Park Jr. design. Toughened a lot. Par 70, 7,300-ish yards. Classical, strategic, undulating tree-lined parklands. Intelligent fairway and greenside bunkering, 85 total. I've got some comments on this. Tightish track, water and play, 9 holes. Fairways are narrow, bent grass. the rough, which I believe will be the major defense here this week, Ryan, is narrow bent grass. Sorry, Kentucky bluegrass, 4 to 5 inches, and patchy. But the course isn't really that long for these guys. If you're thinking about a guy like DJ, greens will be fast, smallish, sloping. A lot of them slope front to back, but around the greens, really not that challenging. I don't think the greens in terms of the complexes and their difficulty will be that difficult for these players. Visually boring, but one of USA's best old school parklands tracks. Another throwing a dig at the end. So I got a message from a member, and Jason Novak, and he said, can I talk to you about the course? I said, sure. So we had about a 2-hour dialogue about it. Let me give you the breakdown of his sentiment on the course. Again, he is a member of this place. It's the North Course, par 70. He said it's very, very straight. And even though there's bunkering on the fairways and around the greens, they're not really that deep. So they're not penal, right? So it's just like hitting out of the rough. Very easy green complexes. Again, very straight. There isn't a lot of route, like a dog-leg routing on this course. The rough will be deep. But if you have like 9 iron or wedge in, does it matter for these guys as much? The greens are not a defense. You can take very ambitious lines off the tee on some of these shorter par fours. He said he's a 6 handicap, and he does now. He said, I can't even imagine what these guys are going to do to it. So the trees aren't tall enough to make that difficult. If it's warmer and it gets firmer, then guys like Kisner and Hatton, potentially, who hit it straight, can really roll out the ball a lot. The only hole that really is interesting from a difficulty standpoint is the par 3, number 8. Have you seen that one? It's like 280.
Yeah, I don't know how long they're going to play it, but yeah, it can be stretched up to 280.
Any other thoughts on this place, or does that pretty much summarize it?
Yeah, I mean, pretty similar. You know, I think just personally, I think after last week and I just feel like they're going to set this place up tough. Now, you can only make a course so tough, but I do think the rough will be up. The greens are already small. I think they're going to tuck the flags because that's this course's defense. And, you know, it is a course that hosts the U.S. Open. So it can be tough. It can be very, very tough. I think that's the only thing that I could see. You know, it's definitely pretty straightforward. But
Furyk won the U.S. Open in -8, which for a U.S. Open setup.
Yeah, it's still pretty easy.
Crazy, right? It's like 15 shots of what it should be.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think,
and
again,
it's Furyk too.
Yeah. I mean, I think you got to keep the ball in play. I think it's about angles into these greens. There's a lot of tabletop greens where you may hit a good shot and it could roll off and then you're scrambling a little bit. So I don't think it's going to play like a U.S. Open, but I think that's the type of player who's going to do well. Now, you have DJ who crushes U.S. Open, so it could be anybody, but I think that's the type of player that I'm looking at this week.
Yeah. I mean, the pricing came out. Let's talk about before pricing. Let's talk about last week. So a lot of these players coming into this week consistently. Well, some interesting ones, but DJ obviously top of the bill. He was absolutely unbelievable. I don't care. You know, I follow West Texas. Is it West Texas Driving Pro? One of the best accounts on Twitter, by the way.
JJ
West Texas Driving Range Pro. Yes. I mean, his content is very, very funny. Plus, he's a very, very good teacher of golf. And he's actually already taught me a lot. And he said today, you know, he might have been kind of drunk on his content. But he said, for all of you saying that the course was easy, he said, if the course was hard, DJ still would have won by 6 or 10. He was that good. But tee to green, DJ Scheffler, English, Kokrak, Ryan. Kokrak.
Yeah, we'll talk about that.
Right. Cameron Smith, what? And then Brian Harman.
Yeah.
Approach, DJ, Cameron Smith. Like some people really busted on me, and I'm always a week behind. But Cameron Smith, I don't know. It's just something about him that just shows up randomly. Hubbard, my God. Rory, and then Henley. Your guy. You will not quit Henley. Off the tee, Rom, Bryce. This is even including miscuts. Rom, Bryson, DJ, Finau. God damn. And Berger.
Yeah.
Your thoughts, your global thoughts right now.
Yeah. So, well, let's start with Jason Kokrak. So since he missed the cut at the PGA.
I'm actually very interested in him this week.
Right?
Go ahead.
Since he missed the cut for me at the PGA and cost me many, many dollars, he's averaged 97 DraftKings points per week. If that's not that's not the biggest crock of shit I've ever heard. But yeah, he gained about five and a half strokes approach yesterday, which is outrageous. I don't love his price this week, but he's definitely in play. Yeah, you mentioned DJ, just off the charts across the board, every single category. Can he duplicate that? I doubt it. But even if he doesn't, he could still win. Maybe he wins by 2 instead of 11. Yeah, Rahm is definitely the interesting one. You know, he kind of spun his wheels all week, played pretty well on Sunday. And then you look and he tied for 6th. He gained 1.5 strokes approach and 2 strokes off the tee. So he is probably my favorite, just assuming DJ takes kind of one step back this week.
So I'm looking at the pricing.
Yeah.
No cut event. So, you know, you're just going to have guys who need to make a lot of birdies over 4 days and not really crap out. I think that even though I just hate the highest priced guy every week, mm-hmm. I don't think that Dustin Johnson quits. He is a man possessed right now. And I genuinely believe that the comments from Brooks at Harding Park have really, even though DJ really is not emotional, he doesn't swing from, you know, hole to hole.
Yeah.
He doesn't get upset. He doesn't, you know, talk badly about anyone. I believe that he is stomping psychologically on Brooks right now. And I love Dustin Johnson in that one slot. Mm-hmm. I think 1-2 are probably, like you said, I think Rahm DJ is the play. Something is just not Thomas-y right now for me.
It's a good way of putting it.
Right.
Or Rory. Yeah. Rory E.
Well, I mean, who was it? Eric Patterson or someone put out today that Rory just said, I cannot get psychologically hyped for these events. I paraphrase that. But basically that no fans, I'm really trying to get the most out of my game right now, but I'm not really motivated. And yeah, you can see it. Like we said that at the PGA Championship, he just looks like he's just,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, there could be a bit of a lack of focus, but I mean, you look at his stats since the restart, it's all short game. Like his driving has been off the charts like it's always been. His irons.
Wasn't last week, though.
Yeah, that was one bad week. Yeah, but the irons were pretty good. But last week was his best iron week. He gained 5.1 stroke gain approach last week. So it's just all short game. And I think that's mental, that's concentration. You know, he lost 6.5 strokes putting last week. That has to be his worst. I mean, it could be his worst ever. Has to be his worst putting in the last year or two. But yeah, look.
Does anyone, he's not a terrible putter, but does anyone not drop more putts than Rory? Nothing falls for him ever.
Yeah. I think it's a confidence thing. Could be a greens reading thing, but yeah, that stuff can change any week, and you put him in a no-cut event, you know, he's in play for sure.
Someone said that about Justin Thomas. I forget someone on Twitter, and I thought about it for a while. I mean, it was Nelson. But do you actually believe that guys of the caliber of Rory and Justin don't read greens well? Do you believe that can happen?
Well, I mean, look, it's all relative. They may not read greens as well as other PGA Tour professionals.
You mean comparatively?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a combination of things, right? These guys have their greens books. They have their prep. You know, when you talk about playing in the South with Bermuda, I mean, you're trying to read the greens, but you're factoring in the grain, you're factoring in the wind. Like, there are other things to consider when you talk about greens reading. So, I guess that can be part of it.
You know, surprisingly, which you don't normally expect from a guy like Dustin Johnson, because you don't see him as really a cerebral player, but I believe that he's one of the better green readers on tour. He really breaks it into those multiple parts, those three parts. And he's now found a putter that he likes. Thank God. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah. The putting was off the charts. He definitely is very confident back with that spider. Not sure if it's the same spider he used to use, but it's obviously the same model. But he's clearly working on the alignment all week, and he just made everything he looked at.
So I don't know what you want to do, but I will say I agree with you, DJ and Rom. To me, I think, and as artificial as that sounds, like that's some sort of insight. I really like them to win. Shocking, but I can make a big jump from there from a price standpoint and go low eights. And then I'm surprised that Harris English is 8,300. Now I promised that I would never in my life be able to play him, but he hits a really nice ball, and he's got great short game in putting, and it's not really a fluke at this point, and he could put up a ton of birdies, mm-hmm. and he's 8,300. That range right there, Kisner playing amazing. I think he's got a fourth and a third. You got Harris English. You got Tyrrell Hatton, which I don't know if – does anyone on earth hit the ball straighter than Tyrrell Hatton?
Well, he hit the ball straight for half his rounds. But, yeah, he hits more irons close to the hole than anybody. He has more three-footers for birdie than anybody. I don't have the empirical data to back that up, but trust me, it's right.
It's drive 0 degrees offline. It's crazy.
Yeah, and of course, Hatton's a guy who can get red hot with the putter too, which we've seen a couple of times. So, yeah.
Do you agree with that range though, like that low eights? Because Victor Hovland is an unbelievable price because you were now Big Dick Vic Stan.
Yeah, I just – fuck, man. He threw away that round with the double and the bogey, and then he three-putted 18 for par. But, yeah, look, Hovland's the biggest hammer of the week here.
What does that mean? What does a hammer mean?
You just have to play him. You have to play a lot of them. I think DraftKings did a really good job with the pricing this week, making it tighter. Really across the board, like guys who are usually mid sixes are now low sevens. Guys who are mid sevens are now low eights, and then they price the top guys up over 10 and 11K. So, but Hovland is definitely the one guy who fell through the cracks. I think the other one would be Tiger. I think both of them are exceptionally cheap. And Hovland, I mean, obviously he hasn't been great for the last few weeks. Last week was better, but you get him in a no cut event. Like this guy makes so many birdies and eagles.
So many.
Like, for 8,100, he doesn't even have to top 10. Because his DraftKings scoring might be top 10. I don't know how many teams I'm going to make, but Victor Hovland will probably be on every single one of them.
I'm really surprised they did not bring Jason Day or Tony Finau's price down. Tony Finau, 8,700. I thought he would be sevens.
Very interesting. I wonder if the ownership was baked into that too. Because, you know, with the showdown prices, it's based on ownership. And like those are the two chalkiest guys last week. So.
So I jumped down to the sevens, and then I've got Ryan Palmer, who was up there last week in ball striking, but this seems like a course fit for him because he reminds me of a Jason Kokrak plus. Mm. We're both mid sevens, and Ryan Palmer can put up a ton of birdies.
Yes.
A ton. I don't know what you're looking at down there, but those two, Kokrak, surprisingly, and Palmer, stand out.
Yeah, I mean, I'll kind of always play Kokrak. This is definitely the highest price that he's pretty much ever been, especially in a field of this strength. But yeah, you just have to ride the form with these guys. We've seen it over and over during the playoffs. You know, guys get hot for 2, 3, 4 weeks, and they pay off. I will say... I think in this range, the one guy who I actually want to play, who I'm excited to play, is the Ryan Palmer pivot, and that's Bubba. Played a lot of Bubba last week. I feel like this was the type of course, you know, if you are thinking it's going to be more bomb and gouge, if you need guys to hit wedges close to small targets, like he's the kind of guy who can do it. Bubba, I like just in general, and especially, you know, Ryan Palmer might be 12 to 15% owned. Bubba will be half of that. So I'll take that all
That's
day.
The pivot. That's the pivot.
That's the pivot, yeah.
And people are forgetting about Gary Woodland too because he hasn't played well. But people love Russell Henley now. Maybe that's the pivot.
Yeah, In certain contests, in cash games, people are still going to play Gary Woodland. I mean, they play him every week. Now he's under $8,000. Like, people will play him, but yeah, I mean, you may get Woodland at 8 to 10% owned some places where he's normally 18 to 20. So,
look at Mark Hubbard. He was third approach last week. Always play Hubbard. He puts up a ton of birdies.
Yeah,
right. But even you think it's high or low?
High.
Yeah. Yeah, because below him is Brian Harman, who's been tearing it up.
Yeah, I think DraftKings did a really good job with the pricing. I think there are some options down here, even lower in the sixes. Some of your stop plays.
Steele, Damon.
Steele's going to be chalk, but he's like the stone cold lock of the week.
You think so?
Well, I mean, chalk for a 6K guy, you know, he might be 10% owned. Okay. Now, Steele makes a ton of birdies, and you give him four rounds in a no-cut event. Ball striking's been really good. Like, yeah, people are going to play him.
I think the stop play, my stop play this week, because I was pretty hot on Cam Davis last week.
Mm-hmm.
My stop play is Kevin Streelman.
I kind of like it.
You don't like it. When your voice goes up like that, you don't like it.
No, when I say
you think I'm an idiot.
No, when I say interesting, I don't like it.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So if I said Michael Thompson, you'd been like,
interesting. Yeah, no, Streelman, look, Streelman, he gets very hot, and it seems like he's had a lot of really low rounds of late. He doesn't put together four rounds, but it's like, oh, Streelman's 600 today. Great. But no, I think there are options here. I think Gooch is someone we've played a lot of the last month. He's been putting well. Poston, actually, his ball striking came around last week, and he didn't putt well, but I think this is a very cheap price for him. Joel Damon, this is a very cheap price for him.
Adam Long, hello?
Adam Longham, yeah. Danny Lee, by the way, was tied for third at the turn on Sunday, and then he bogeyed six or seven holes on the back. So people will see that he finished 18th, but like Danny Lee was firmly there with Harris English last week. So that's another interesting
thing. Is there any bigger enigma on tour than Danny Lee? Because Danny Lee is always low priced. Danny Lee, suddenly for three rounds, he's number one or two, and then he just absolutely evaporates. You said it years ago that Danny always played Danny Lee on tough courses.
Yeah, tough courses. Yeah. I don't even know what he does well.
I don't.
He makes birdies. That's what he does well, but I guess that's good.
I guess.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing for DraftKings is just going to be how you want to build your team. Because again, the pricing is tighter. And in these strong fields, you know, we see it like with majors, balanced teams often win. Now it's a little bit different this week with the no cut because you can get a little more aggressive. But I could for sure see teams that go like start with Berger, right? Like you go a Berger, Morikawa, Scheffler for a start. Like, that's a very, very strong team considering all those guys are in great form.
Who's the bust this week? Who's the very popular bust this week?
Honestly, I think it's the same guys as last week. I think everyone played Bryson and Rory last week. They were not encouraging, and I have no reason to go back to them this week. So if I play guys in this price range, it's going to be DJ Rahm and JT, and I will not play Bryson or Rory.
I think the USAM is going to get people more on Bryson.
Sure.
Because it's a bomb course. I think he's a bust, though.
Yeah, and I think, you know, with the concentration of some chalk this week, like, there are a few guys who are going to be very, very overlooked. One of them that I don't think I have interest in, except for ownership, is Patrick Cantlay. This is about as cheap as you'll find Cantlay, and literally nobody's going to play him.
Yes, I didn't even see him.
Well, he's right below Berger, Morikawa, Scheffler, and right above Reed, Finau, Tiger, right? Like, nobody's going to play him.
No one.
So that's an interesting name. Yeah, but I'm excited about this week. I think there's a lot of different outcomes here. You have to factor in the FedEx Cup stuff. Like, you look at DJ and JT, they're kind of locked into their spots already with not a whole lot that they need to play for. When other guys have a lot to play for.
Louis continued to play well too.
We are so done with Louis.
Why? Because of what he did on Sunday?
Yeah. I mean, look, he doesn't put four rounds together. He never really seems that motivated. And really he hasn't been great. Like, the ball striking's okay, but it's like, he's not finishing like in the top five.
Is his swing the most majestic thing you've ever seen in life.
Yeah, I just wish he would use it better. It's so good. Like, he should birdie every hole, but he doesn't.
West Texas Driving Pro, West Texas Driving Range Pro, which is more good content. He made his kid be quiet because it was NC-17. Because he said, Louis Swing is on. You just quiet while dad watches this for himself.
Yeah, him and Cam Davis. Like, how good is that kid swing?
Oh my God, it's crazy good.
Yeah, but he hit like three balls out of bounds, so that was bad.
Yeah, you sent me the shot tracker for one when you needed it.
Yeah, well, and on Saturday he tripled 16 coming in, and that was just the start of the end.
Well, he's what I know about golf swings now is that he shallows it out so much that he's mm-hmm. gonna hit it right.
Yeah,
sometimes. Like I do every shot.
Sure.
All right, man. Was that it? We good? Who wins?
Rom?
Yeah, I could see that.
I just, yeah, you know.
Let's say not a DJ or Rom pick. Who wins?
Not a DJ or Rom pick.
Say it.
Webb Simpson.
Your guy. No, you went off Matt. You divorced Matt Fitzpatrick for him.
Yeah, Berger has a great chance.
No, you divorced Matthew Fitzpatrick for this guy. Who is it?
Oh, Hovland?
Yes.
Yeah, I hope he can win. I will have close to 100%, but no, I did bet Webb Simpson, so I guess I'll pick Webb if it's not wrong.
All right. Thanks, man.
See you. Talk soon.
Bye. All right, thanks for listening. Sorry for the long-winded opening. I just like to sometimes go down that path and think about the psychology behind consumerism and how that relates to real market problems and what I would do to create a solution. That's that. How does it affect this week in terms of golf predictions? None. Zero. Easy choice, Dustin Johnson. Difficult choice, Tyrrell Hatton. But who knows? That's all going to change. Wednesday Periscope, that's becoming more fun, right? I like those. It's becoming, I'm sort of getting a rhythm for it. So Wednesday at 7-ish, we'll do those. Talk to you then. Talk to you then, and then talk to you number 160.